Good morning. Greetings to everyone in Jesus' name this morning. Thank you, visitors, for joining with us and participating. Today is Palm Sunday. I preached on Palm Sunday last year, so I didn't plan to have a specific message on that. But as Nevin mentioned, let's be thinking about that this week and what Easter means. I've been wanting for some time to learn to preach without all my notes written down or reading, basically having it all written out, and I decided if I don't start sometime, I'll never be able to do it. So bear with me if I attempt to do a little more of that this morning, and so we'll see how it goes. The title is, "If Thy Presence Go Not With Us, Carry Us Not Up Hence." And that's taken from Exodus. We'll look at that verse later in the message. To call to faith and trust in God, and especially like looking into the future as we think about discerning God's will for ordination and outreach and growth in our families and in the church. And after all these years of new church plantings and outreach and missions, you would think maybe we would have it boiled down to a simple recipe or a formula. Here's how it's done. But that's not how this works. God will not be boxed in by our well laid out plans. And so we need to be open to how God leads us. I would like to look at the children of Israel and their journey from Egypt to the Promised Land as some examples of how some of the types and things that we can relate to in life, in spiritual bondage, in lack of faith, in unbelief. And I want to make it clear, I'm not suggesting that if the council is clear to go ahead with outreach, that those that move to the Promised Land and those that stayed in Egypt. But think about it as a journey that they were on. Here's a quote: "Faith isn't a feeling. It's a choice to trust God even when the road ahead seems uncertain." I think Greg had posted that on the men's group one day, and it stuck with me. Hebrews 11, verse 6 says, "But without faith it is impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." And in Matthew 9, Jesus, there was these two blind men that came running to Jesus, and they wanted him to have mercy on them and heal them of their blindness. And Jesus said, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" And they said, "Yes, Lord." And then what did Jesus reply? He simply said, "According to your faith, be it unto you." Think about that. Would we be that brave on the journey that we're on, the struggles we face, the uncertainties of life, and we cry out for help? If you could hear Jesus respond to you in your quest for that, and he said, "According to your faith, be it unto you," would you be okay with that? Here's a book, something out of a book I was reading. It says, "One of the reasons we lack faith and clarity today is we have lost a sense of the grandeur and majesty of God. If we don't have a vision of who he is, it's difficult to acquire a vision of what he wants us to do. Let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 10. We're going to spend a fair bit of time in Numbers, Exodus, Deuteronomy, and then we'll end in Hebrews. God gives a simple requirement for Israel, and it has not changed for us. Here is what God requires of Israel, did require of Israel, and of us today. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 12. And now, Israel, what doth the Lord thy God require of thee, but to fear the Lord thy God, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, and to serve the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul, to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command thee this day for thy good. And if you might recall, in Luke, there was this lawyer that came to Jesus and asked what he needed to do to inherit eternal life. And the lawyer quoted this to Jesus, this command to love the Lord. And Jesus said, yes, you answered right. And then he gave him one more thing that he didn't say, the lawyer didn't say. He said, Jesus said, do this and you will live, you will find life. So it's more than just talking about our ideals or the things that we hope for. It's actually living them out. So I would like to look at some of the background of Israel in leading up to them on this journey to the Promised Land. And then later, Lord willing, we'll have part two to this message of actually their entrance into the Promised Land. You can turn to Exodus chapter 1. And as you know, Jacob and his family had moved down to Egypt in the famine, and Joseph was there and provided for them, and they ended up staying there. And they multiplied in verse 6 of Exodus chapter 1. We'll read here, verse 6 through 14. And Joseph died, and all his brethren, and all that generation. And the children of Israel were fruitful, and increased abundantly, and multiplied, and waxed exceeding mighty, and the land was filled with them. Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. And he said unto his people, behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we are, than we. Come on. Let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply, and it come to pass that when there falleth out any war, they join also unto our enemies and fight against us, and so get them up out of the land. Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramnes. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were grieved because of the children of Israel. And the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with vigor. So the Egyptians were concerned about these people taking over their land. And so they decided, well, we'll just make them slaves and give them hard work to do, and this will take care of it. Well, they just multiplied the more. And so Pharaoh commanded the midwives to kill all the boy babies. That's going to keep them from having men come up to age of war. But that didn't work. And then in chapter 2, verse 23 and 25, this was after Moses was born and he grew up, and in Exodus 2:23-25, it says, "And it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage, and they cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect unto them." So they were desperate here, and God heard their cry. So in chapter 3 and 4, God called Moses to lead them out. And we're not going to look at that much, but there was a fair bit of struggle in Moses' heart in accepting this call, but he accepted to do it with Aaron's help. And in chapter 4, verse 29-31, Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel, and Moses spake all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses, and did the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed. And when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel, and that he had looked upon their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshipped. It sounds like they were set to go, right? They bowed their heads in worship. They felt like their cry had been heard, and that the Lord was offering deliverance, and so they were set. Well, in chapter 5, when Moses went and confronted Pharaoh about this and told them that they were going to leave, Pharaoh said, "No, it's not going to go that easy. We're going to stop you up. We're actually going to make you work harder. Apparently, you didn't have enough to do." And so they made them go find their own straw rather than providing it for them to make their bricks. And the officers beat the people when they weren't bringing enough. And then in verse 19 and to 21 of chapter 5, it says the officers of the children of Israel did see that they were in evil case after it was said, "Ye shall not minish aught from your bricks or your daily tasks." And they met Moses and Aaron, who stood in the way as they came forth from Pharaoh. And they said unto them, "The Lord look upon you and judge, because you have made our Savior to be abhorred in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of his servants, to put his sword in their hand to slay us." And Moses returned unto the Lord and said, "Lord, wherefore hast thou so evil entreated this people? Why have you sent me?" And what it boiled down to is the people were very upset and wanted to blame someone for this. And of course, if Moses hadn't gone and talked to Pharaoh, then they wouldn't have been put to harder tasks than they already were. Well, in chapter 6, Moses talks to God, and God comes back and renews his covenant and said, "No, I want my people to go. You're going to do it to help lead them out." In verse 7 through 13 of chapter 6, in especially verse 7, it says, "And I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you a God. And ye shall know that I am the Lord your God, which bringeth you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians." And then in verse 9, Moses spake so unto the children of Israel, but they hearkened not unto Moses for anguish of spirit and for cruel bondage. Do you get a picture of what's going on here? These people were in deep agony and bondage, and they could not, they were at their wit's end with life. And here was deliverance. And I guess they felt like they couldn't handle one more thing or one more chance of being anything more. And they said, "No, we're not going to listen to what you're saying, even though you say God told you to do this." God said to Moses, "I want my people out of here. I ask you to do it." Now, go lead them out. I believe that's in verse, well, it, I kind of summed that up through the chapter 7. And then we have all these plagues on the Egyptians, and the Egyptians, Israel left Egypt. They had the miracle at the Red Sea. The Egyptian army was destroyed. They watched that happen. They came in chapter 14, verse 31. It says at the end of all that, it says, "And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians, and the Lord, sorry, and the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses." So here they are again, back at a safe spot. They saw the work of the Lord, they feared the Lord, they believed the Lord, and they recognized that Moses was working under God's blessing. And then in chapter 15, they have the song of Moses, and Miriam also had a song that they sang together. And I'm going to read the first two verses of that song in chapter 15. "Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord, and spake, saying, I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare him an habitation, my father's God, and I will exalt him." And then down to verse 11. "Who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praise, doing wonders?" And then we have Miriam's song in verse 20 and 21. "And Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them, Sing ye to the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea." And then they came down into the wilderness, and they found no water. So in chapter 16, It says 15 days of the second month after they departed out of Egypt. So I would take that to mean 45 days after they left Egypt. This account is given here of them murmuring in the wilderness. In verses 2 and 3 of chapter 16, "The whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. If only we had just died in Egypt." Really? Is that what they meant? Was that really what their heart was? That's what they're saying now. Okay, so in chapter 16, verse 11 through 16, they needed things, something to eat, and so God said he would send this quail and manna. He would provide for them in that way every day, quail and manna. In verse 19, Moses gave a simple instruction about this manna. He said, and Moses said, "Let no man leave of it until the morning." Like, don't only gather the amount of manna you need. In verse 20, "Notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto Moses, but some of them left of it until the morning, and it bred worms and stank. Moses was wroth with them." So I think we need to see what's starting to happen here going on with these people and think back to that first verse I read about what the Lord requires, what the Lord required of them, what the Lord requires of us. There's a quote from the Times magazine that says, "Leaders are tested only when people don't want to follow." And I think Moses felt very tested here already, and he was going to have a lot more tests coming. A simple command to not keep the manna overnight, and some people had to try it anyway. Sometimes we're like these people where we want to find a villain to pin it to or to blame it on. Like here they were hungry, they needed water, they just were dissatisfied, and so maybe we could be tempted to say, well, maybe the reason these people weren't accepting Moses and him leading them like he should have is because, you know, back there when God first called him, he really struggled to accept it. And if he had just accepted his call and embraced it, then the people would have wanted to follow him. No, I don't think they wanted to listen because their heart was not fearing the Lord and walking in all his ways. I don't think we need to oversimplify it or overcomplicate it. They were simply not following, fearing the Lord. Verse 26 through 29, then a similar thing happened. Again, 6 days ye shall gather it. On the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there shall be none. And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day to gather, and they found none. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? For that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath, therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place, let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. Very similar to what they tried to do, keeping it overnight. I believe one of the things that's going on here is these people came from Egypt with a victim mentality. And I don't want to minimize the pain and hardship and bondage they were in. I believe that they were victims in that case. But they kept living with that. And rather than focusing on God and his provision and his promise to them, They looked at what they didn't have. Very, very much goes along with what Daryl was talking about in devotions, where you can either become, you can be a victor or you can become a victim. And there's a quote that goes, adopting a victim mentality is a train ride to a depressing nowhere. And unchecked, that's what gave them a 40-year ride into the desert that led into deeper sins of unbelief and rebellion. So over in chapter 17 then, the people are chiding with Moses. And it's interesting, and here they were with no water to drink again, and in verse 2 of chapter 17, wherefore the people did chide with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said unto them, why chide ye with me? Wherefore do ye tempt the Lord? And the people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst? And the Lord cried, and Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, what shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to stone me. And I believe here in our words, Moses is saying, I can't give you water. Why are you chiding me? This is God's work to do. They were focusing on their current discouragement, their current crisis. I thought of this quote that we've heard often, the will of God will never lead you where the grace of God cannot keep you. They couldn't have crossed that Red Sea and not have known that God was leading them, right? So how do they get to this point, and as soon as they're out of water, they're like, somehow it's Moses' fault? Here's a quote that says, unsuccessful people make their decisions based on their current situation. Successful people make their decisions based on where they want to be. So if we're in a crisis like this, or we're in a hard spot, and we are making our decisions based on not having any water, it's probably not going to be a good decision. Okay, let's turn over to Numbers 11. Numbers 11. I just wasn't able to get this all sorted out in my mind to where in Exodus and where in Numbers some of these accounts may be similar or repeated, but here's an account where the people were complaining. And four through six. The mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all besides this manna before our eyes. So then in verse 18 through 20, God said, I will give them flesh. In verse 20, he said, but even a whole month until it come out at your nostrils and it be loathsome unto you, because that ye have despised the Lord which is among you, and ye have wept before him, saying, why came we out of Egypt? So here they had plenty of meat, but it was going to actually come out at their nostrils, he said. And in Psalm 106 refers to this, and it simply says, Psalm 106 verse 15 said, and he gave them their request, so they wanted meat. He gave them to it. He gave them their request, but sent leanness to their souls. And I don't think any of us want to be at that place where we're given what we want, but with that comes leanness of soul. In this same chapter, chapter 11 of Numbers, Moses is crying out to God for help. Like, I can't do this by myself. Are these my children? Like, how can I do this? And God said, well, I'll get you some help. We'll appoint 70 men of the elders, and they'll help you lead this congregation. And it's interesting what we'll just read verses 24 to 30, and especially note what Moses says in verse 29. And Moses went out, verse 24, Moses went out and told the people the word of the Lord, and gathered the 70 men of the elders of the people, and set them round about the tabernacle. And the Lord came down in a cloud and spake unto him, and took of the spirit that was upon him, and gave it unto the 70 elders. And it came to pass that when the spirit rested upon them, they prophesied and did not cease. But there remained two of the men in the camp. The name of the one was Eldad, and the name of the other was Medad. And the spirit rested upon them, and they were of them that were written. but went not out into the tabernacle, and they prophesied in the camp. And there ran a young man unto Moses and said, Eldad and Medad do prophesy in the camp. And Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of Moses, one of his young men, answered and said, My lord Moses, forbid them. And Moses said unto him, Enviest thou for my sake? Would God that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put his spirit upon them. And Moses got him into the camp, he and the elders of Israel. Moses was wishing that every single one of the Israelites would be prophesying and be hearing the Lord's voice rather than only 70 of them. Okay, so let's turn now to chapter 13 in Numbers. This gives the account of where the children of Israel were sending out spies to check out the land of Canaan. And I can only imagine, after all this being stuck with manna and quail and not sure if you're going to have water the next day, I get a desperate feeling if I forget my water jug and I'm in the tractor for 2 hours without water. It's kind of like, I really should have something to drink. Well, think about if you were with that size of crowd and there's no water around. I don't want to be too hard on these people, but we do need to make some connections about their unbelief and their rebellion. In Numbers chapter 13, we'll read verses 1 through 3. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them into the wilderness of Paran. And all those men were the heads of the children of Israel. And now we'll skip to verse 17. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Go ye up this way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwell therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not, and be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as the men came to Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron. Now, okay, let's go on to verse 23. And they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch of one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. And the place was called the brook of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from thence. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and Aaron, and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sendest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and are very great, and moreover we saw the children of Anak there. And the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it, it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of a great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. Really? That verse 33 just impresses me. I can agree that they were in their own sight as grasshoppers, but did they talk to the men there in this, the giants, and ask, do we kind of look like grasshoppers in your sight? And then in verse, in chapter 14, it goes into this much more, and I wish we had time to just read it all, but I'll read a few verses. I'll just skim through, and you're welcome to keep along. All the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. So now they added another step. I wish we had died in Egypt, but since we didn't die there, I wish we had died back there in the wilderness when we didn't have water. And now, yeah. Wherefore hath the Lord brought us up into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, let us make a captain, let us return into Egypt. And then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear ye the Lord of the land. For they are bread for us, and their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people provoke me? How long will it be ere they believe me? For all the signs which I have showed among them, I will smite them with the pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of thee a greater nation and mightier than they. And Moses said unto the Lord, then the Egyptians shall hear it, and they'll tell everybody, and your name's going to be blasphemed. Verse 17, and now I beseech thee, let the power of my Lord be great, according as thou hast spoken, saying, the Lord is longsuffering and of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, and by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. Pardon, I pray thee, the iniquity of this people, according unto the greatness of thy mercy, as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. And the Lord said, I have pardoned according to thy word. But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Because all those men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened to my voice, surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him, and hath followed me wholly, him will I bring into the land wherein he went, and his seed shall possess it. Okay, let's skip over to verse 36 and 37. The men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land, died by the plague before the Lord. But Joshua and the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of the men that went to search the land, lived still. We just need to keep reading here and see the magnitude of what happened and what was going on. And Moses told these sayings unto all the children of Israel, that these men had been killed and no, they weren't going to be allowed to enter into the land because of their unbelief. And they rose up early in the morning and gat them into the top of the mountains, saying, lo, we be here, and we go up unto the place which the Lord hath promised, for we have sinned. And Moses said, wherefore now do ye transgress the commandment of the Lord? But it shall not prosper. Go not up, for the Lord is not among you. that ye be not smitten before your enemies. But they, in verse 44, they presumed to go up unto the top of the hill. Nevertheless, the ark of the covenant of the Lord and Moses departed not out of the camp. Then the Amalekites came down, and the Canaanites which dwell on that hill, and smote them and discomfited them even unto Hormah. I'm not going to comment much on that, but I hope you're getting the magnitude of what's going on with these people's unbelief and rebellion and what it's leading to. And in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 34, Moses gives kind of a summary, like he reviews what happened here. And I'd like to read a few verses there. Deuteronomy chapter 1, in verse 34. So this is Moses talking, and he's talking about this account. The Lord heard the voice of your words and was wroth and sware, saying, surely there shall not be one of these men of this evil generation see that good land which I swear to give unto your fathers, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him will I give the land that he hath trodden upon, and to his children, because he hath wholly followed the Lord. Also the Lord was angry with me, Moses, for your sakes, saying, thou shalt not go in thither. And that was because of his striking the rock instead of speaking to it. Also the Lord was angry, Joshua the son of Nun, which standeth before thee, he shall go in thither, encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it. Moreover, your little ones, which ye said should be a prey, and your children, which in that day hath no knowledge between good and evil, they shall go in thither, and unto them will I give it, and they shall possess it. But as for you, turn you, and take your journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. Then ye answered and said unto me, we have sinned against the Lord. We will go up and fight according to all that the Lord our God commanded us. And when ye had girded on every man his weapon of war, ye were ready to go up into the hill. And the Lord said unto me, say unto them, go not up, neither fight, for I am not among you, lest you be smitten before your enemies. So I spake unto you, and ye would not hear, but rebelled against the commandment of the Lord, and went presumptuously up into the hill. And the Amorites, which dwelt in that mountain, came out against you, and chased you as bees do, and destroyed you in Seir, even unto Hormah. And ye returned and wept before the Lord, but the Lord would not hearken to your voice, nor give ear unto you. That's a sad story, and it's a dismal ending there that they said, we have sinned. They returned and they wept, but the Lord said, I will not listen, I will not hear. So is that where he left them? No. That step, though, of acknowledging their sin was not enough. The Lord was not willing to move on with them until they did something about it. And Deuteronomy chapter 4 gives what the Lord asked them to do to clear it up. And it's right back to where we started. Deuteronomy 4, 29 to 31. But if from thence thou shalt seek the Lord thy God, thou shalt find him, if thou seek him with all thy heart and with all thy soul. When thou art in tribulation, and all these things are come upon thee, even in the latter days, if thou turn to the Lord thy God, and shalt be obedient unto his voice, for the Lord thy God is a merciful God. He will not forsake thee, neither destroy thee, nor forget the covenant of thy fathers, which he sware unto them. So see, God took them right back to where he started with them. If you fear the Lord, if you seek after him with your whole heart and soul, he will hear, he will lead. So the two main takeaways from this account, there's plenty of things we can learn, but their unbelief and rebellion, God could not tolerate. And I don't believe he has any more toleration for unbelief and rebellion today than he did then. In Isaiah 30, verse 15, he says, I'm going to just turn to it. Isaiah 30, verse 15. Thus saith the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel, in returning and rest, or what that means is in repentance and faith, ye shall be saved. In quietness and confidence shall be your strength, and ye would not. In Matthew 23, Jesus talked to the Jews there. He said, how oft I would have gathered thy children together as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and ye would not. Let's turn to Exodus 33. This should be our prayer as we go forth in life in faith, as we deal with victim mentalities and unbelief and rebellion, whatever is not seeking the Lord with our whole hearts. Exodus 33, verse 12 through 15, this is where the title comes from. And Moses said unto the Lord, see, thou sayest unto me, bring up this people, and thou hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Yet thou hast said, I know thee by name, and thou hast found grace in my sight. Now therefore, I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, show me now thy way, that I may know thee, and that I may find grace in thy sight, and consider that this nation is thy people. And he said, God said, my presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. And he said, Moses said unto God, if thy presence go not with me, carry us not up hence. I would like to turn to Hebrews chapter 3 yet to close. There's the writer here refers to this account of the children of Israel and their evil heart of unbelief, it calls it here. And it talks about in verse 8 and verse 15, it talks about the provocation. And that simply means the rebellion. So in Hebrews 3, verse 7 through 19, wherefore, as the Holy Ghost said today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts as in the provocation, or as in the rebellion, in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation, and said, they do always err in their hearts, and they have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Take heed, brethren. Now, we're not talking history here. He's talking to us today. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ, if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. While it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation. For some, when they had heard, did provoke, albeit not all that came out of Egypt by Moses. But with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom sware he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not? So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. And we'll read verse 1 of chapter 4 yet. Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left of us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. So back to what we talked about in the beginning, God's message to us today is the same as it was to them. In I'll just read that verse here yet to end on. Chapter 10, Deuteronomy, verse 12. "And now, Israel, what doth the Lord thy God require of thee, but to fear the Lord thy God, to walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul." Let's kneel for prayer.